Hi everybody, it's Lee here from the Give Paddy Jolly Good Show. Can't wait to share this episode with you. It's a special launch episode for Series 4. I get to talk to the incredible superstar, real-life superhero, Jordan Wiley. I hope you enjoy the episode. I loved having a chat with him and hearing, again, all of the stories behind some of the craziest fundraising challenges he's taken on. And I hope you enjoy the episode. So, without further ado, here we go. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Jolly Good Show from GivePenny. I'm Lee Clark, one of the founders and the CEO, which stands for Chief Everything Officer. Believe me, during 2020 and the early part of 2021, I really do feel like I do everything, but I cannot take all the credit. Our team this year, especially in this last 12 months, have been unreal. So a big shout out to the GivePenny team for being as awesome as they have been. We've raised over £1 million for charity through our platform. We've done loads of cool stuff. We've had Spotify playlists raising money. We've done virtual events that have raised their fundraising target in weeks instead of months. It's just been a roller coaster and the team have been amazing. So big shout out to you lot who are listening. This week, I am joined by someone I think I might have a man crush on. It's Jordan Wiley, adventurer, best-selling author and champion fundraiser. Thanks for joining us today, Jordan. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me. Great to be on this week's show.
Yeah, we like to do it. We keep it loose. We keep it loose on this show. But today I want to talk about what it's like being a fundraiser, what it's like being at the very cutting edge of how to raise money at scale. So plenty of people, they'll do a 4 to 6 week challenge. They'll ask their friends and family to donate. They'll raise a few hundred quid. And that is amazing. The impact that that money has, especially now, is massive. At the other end of the continuum, you as a fundraising rock star are there raising six figure sums, doing crazy stuff. I don't want to steal any thunder from the crazy things you've done because they'll come up during the conversation. But what's it like being an adventurer that raises such massive amounts of money and awareness for charities in the UK?
It's brilliant because I think, you know, it's so rewarding and so fulfilling. I think to do adventure anyway is great fun. You know, I don't think anyone can disagree with that. But to do adventures and challenges that have a positive impact on society, for me, children, young people's lives, that's where my passion lies. So it's probably the most rewarding thing. In fact, it's the most selfish thing because I go and get to do all these great fun things and have all the, you know, amazing fun. Lots of people support me. And it's a real privilege. But most importantly, I always say that it's not about what I'm doing. It's about why I'm doing it. And I think it's so important to remember your why. It's an honor. You know, I feel very blessed, very fortunate. But at the same time, don't be disillusioned. It's very hard work. You know, I spend a lot of time, many man hours every day, trying to raise awareness, trying to manage sponsors, trying to promote the good causes. But great fun. You know, and I wouldn't do it any other way.
You know what? You've got to have fun. I think in everything that you do, especially at the moment, it's got to have that spine, hasn't it? The spine of this is fun and rewarding, but let's not take anything away from the incredible things you've done to raise money for good causes. And you can do as much plugging as you like today, Jordan, because, you know, this is a feel-good show. It's all about good news and good vibes. And people listen to it because they want to hear about good things, effectively. Jolly good in the way that it operates.
Excellent.
What kind of things, I mean, it might be worth doing a chronological kind of thing. Like, what are the things you have done that people might sit up and go, he did what?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because like a lot of people out there, and as you said earlier, whether you're raising, you know, £5, £10 or hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands, millions, it's incredible. Anybody who raises any amount of money for a great cause, and there's never a shortfall of great causes. And that's the challenge. It's trying to make your cause, I guess, or your charitable aim stand out in a very crowded marketplace. And they're all amazing causes, whether it's, you know, for children, whether it's homelessness, whether it's mental health, whether it's guide dogs, whether it's cancer. You know, you're never short of an amazing cause to work hard for. But I think for me, when you're trying to raise substantial funds and go into the six-figure plus sort of domain, which is, you know, a real serious fundraising, which takes a lot of your spare time and a lot of hard work. It's about doing things differently. It's, you have to be creative, you have to be innovative, you have to try things that haven't been done before, because ultimately you want the public to buy into, you know, into your journey, into your dream, for whatever it is you're trying to do. And to do that, you need a lot of PR and media coverage and things like that. And it's a bit of a vicious cycle, because the crazier the idea, or the more riskier, or the more dangerous sometimes, the more interest the media comes. And the more interest the media comes, the more interest comes from the public, which means more people want to put their hand in their pocket and sponsor you. So I don't do wacky, crazy things because I'm some kind of an adrenaline junkie or some kind of madman. I do it because it gives me the platform to raise as much money as possible. You know, if I could go for a walk in my local park and do the 5K instead of having to, you know, run marathons through war zones or paddle across dangerous countries or whatever it might be, I'd much rather be happier doing that, you know, and going back to my family every night. But unfortunately, that isn't how the world works. And, you know, I take my hat off and salute any fundraiser out there, whether it's doing a virtual 5K, or whether it's climbing a mountain or jumping out of a plane or whatever it might be. You know, all these people who are selfless, they really inspire me. But I think the first time I really understood that you have to do things differently if you want to raise substantial amounts of money was probably about six or seven years ago, when a couple of my friends were going to Kilimanjaro, which is in Africa, in Tanzania. It's called the Roof of Africa. It's one of the highest freestanding mountains in the world, and it's a really high mountain, but it's not necessarily the toughest. But it's still, don't get me wrong, it's still a real challenging mountain for anyone. You need to be in good shape and fit to take it on. But it's certainly not an Everest or a K2 or you know, one of these elite mountains, if you like. But it's a mountain that's accessible to a lot of people. And I said, yo, I'd love to come along and do some fundraising. And I think we were raising for a cancer charity at the time. And I said to my two friends who had arranged it, I said, why don't we do things a bit differently? And they said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, why don't we walk up it with no shoes on and do it barefoot like the locals do? You know, I was out there, I've been there to that part of the world many times, and a lot of people are walking around barefoot. Why don't we climb the mountain barefoot and give our project a bit of identity? Why don't we call it Barefoot Warrior? It sounds sexy, it sounds cool. We'll make a nice little logo, we'll build a website. And they all thought I was bonkers and they weren't interested. They said, no, we're going to climb it because it's tough enough to climb. Never mind doing it with no shoes on. And I said, well, I'm going to try it with no shoes on. And we did exactly the same climb. It took us a lot longer, and huge respect to my friends, because they went at my pace because I was going a bit slower, because obviously with no footwear and things. But they raised a couple of £1,000 and I raised nearly £70,000. And it was really interesting because we did exactly the same journey. And the only differentiator was the fact I took my shoes off. And I thought, you know, why is that so special? And it wasn't. It wasn't special. We were just doing things differently. We were doing something that had been done hundreds of times, thousands of times by lots of people. But we just put a little twist on it. And that was enough to capture the imagination of the very kind public who made donations. And that was the first time I really realized that you don't have to be the fittest, the fastest, the best at whatever it is you're doing. You just have to be a little bit different and think outside the box with your challenges. And that's what I've done ever since, really. I think if you're going to do a big fundraising project, try to do something differently. Maybe it has been done before, but you're doing it with a twist, or it could be a world first. Again, they attract a lot of media attention. Anything that involves world first or world record, generally, you can quite easily get media coverage. And for me personally, you know, I've done lots of different world records, world first. They're not that important to me personally. You know, a piece of paper that hangs on the wall that, you know, that gives your ego a boost is not that important, but it is important if you're trying to get the media and you know, the newspapers, the TV channels interested, because they like stories like that, and they like to see people pushing the boundaries. But then, yeah, I've just took that sort of basic concept of doing things differently and tried to sort of use it as a platform for raising lots of money for charity. And I think doing things like one of the projects was Running Dangerously. Again, it wasn't that genius, really, but although it raised a substantial amount.
You did that one in your shoes.
I did that one in my shoes, yes. Shoes. Yeah.
Okay.
Did that one in my trainers. So, yeah, Running Dangerously was a concept of running long-distance endurance sort of runs, races in dangerous countries. But, you know, all I was doing was running like I would run in the UK, but I was just doing it in a different location. But because I'd give it this identity, running dangerously, and it had a logo with like guns and flames and, you know, all these sort of super sexy things you might see in a Hollywood movie, it really, again, caught the imagination of the people. And the idea was to run in three of the most dangerous countries. But of course they're dangerous, and of course there's a risk. But you know, risk is something that's always at the forefront of my mind. I'm quite sensible. I'm mature. I take everything that I do starts with a risk assessment. You know, so it's as safe as it can possibly be. And also, it allowed me going to Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia to do these races. It allowed me to capture it and document it. And this was when I, you know, really started using the GivePenny platform, really, because it was the first platform that I'd come across that allowed me to capture everything I was doing in one place. So all my donors, my sponsors, I didn't have to email them and text them and update them all the time or WhatsApp videos through. I just put them on my GivePenny page, and I'm talking about everything from pictures of me with the locals to maps of where I was running to, you know, anything from local music that might sort of play into the local cultural scene. So they could really get a feel for the journey that I was on, you know, and I think that was really important. And it really took off. And, you know, the Running Dangerously project then became the Rowing Dangerously project. And then the next year, we, again, using the GivePlenty platform, this time I was getting a bit more creative. So I started my training for a big rowing expedition called Rowing Dangerously, which was a world first row across a very dangerous strait of water on the Horn of Africa between Djibouti and Yemen. And again, the reason I chose that area was because, not because it was super dangerous, but because firstly, and most importantly, it was an area where that has seen huge impact from conflict and war, and a lot of children have been displaced. So I wanted to raise the profile of the children in that area. So I needed to find a challenge that was relevant to the cause, if that makes sense. So I came up with the Rowing Dangerously. But what was really interesting was the way we engage with the public, because we started the training in at the start of February. So we came up with February, which again is not that genius. It's pretty basic, but it was enough to get a lot of people interested. And using the GivePenny platform, I was able to encourage rowers from around the world. And I think we had about 12 countries on the platform, people in different countries and groups of people, from rowing clubs to, you know, the little old lady who had an old rowing machine in a conservatory, to an Olympic. We had Alex Gregory, MBE, who was a double Olympic gold rower, on the platform. And what the platform did for us was it allowed to put up a bit of a fun competitive edge into the rowing challenge, because whether you was out on the water rowing like I was, or you was in the gym, or you was, as I say, this little old lady in a conservatory on the old rowing machine, you were able to record and capture your data. You could even post videos of you doing the row. You could upload pictures, and you could also chat with and comment with other people who you'd never met in your life around the world on this little platform. And at the same time as having that sort of community engagement, what we also had as a sort of a byproduct of that was league tables, and everyone is competitive. It doesn't matter who you are, you know, whether you're the Olympic champion or the little old lady, you want to be at the top of that league table.
You do. Like, you've got a situation there where, like, you're inspiring action, and in previous challenges, the action you're hoping to inspire is a donation. And there's a weight to that. It's like you have to go and run and then people donate, but you carrying the entire journey. Whereas with February, you were able to inspire action that was, do something similar to me, come along the journey in some way, you row and you raise money, and it will all count towards the central goal, which is to row this dangerous stretch of water where sharks, risk of kidnap, obviously, you're rowing. So, you know, if I remember rightly, you hadn't really learned how to row.
No, I'd never rowed at all. It was incredible, really. And that February was the start of my training. So all these people, some of them friends, some family, but mostly strangers who I'd never met, they were able to start that whole journey, which lasted a year, through starting the February and then continue on the engagement with me as I went along. And we would do things through the platform, like Q&A sessions. We would do live videos, you know, and the league table wasn't just for how far you'd rowed. It was also a table for how much you'd fundraised. And at the same time, we would award prizes. You know, you could win a Rowing Dangerously cap and a T-shirt for best rower of the month or best fundraiser of the week or whatever it might be. And I think that when fundraising becomes community-based and fun, it becomes emotional. And I think from a charity's perspective or from a fundraiser's perspective, that's so powerful when you can tap into the emotions of your donors, because then they're really on the journey. It's not just put a pound in the bucket and we never see you again. It's like, I'm coming with you. I'm training with you. I'm on the hardships of this journey with you. And not only that, more importantly, I'm contributing to that outcome, which is, in this case, it was to build a school on the Horn of Africa. And they're almost helping you brick by brick build that, you know, so there's a real tangible product at the end of that. And that's always been a bit of a bugbearer. You know, I've raised lots of money for charities over the year, but for me, it's about accountability. It's about knowing exactly where that money's going to go. Mm-hmm. And people, I find, if they can see an output at the end of it, they're more likely to get involved and support you, as opposed to it just going into a big pot that no one really knows.
Some of the most successful fundraising exercises we've seen have been where there's been a specific challenge. You know, it's like, for you, it was row. and it was you had a number of distances that someone could choose to try and row over that period of time. I think we got into did we get into hundreds of thousands of meters?
Yeah, and by the end of it? Yeah, we did. And but what was interesting, like you say, so there was milestones, but then milestones were linked to the journey. So you could row like 20K and you would see how far you'd rowed in the ocean because of the GivePenny technology and the mapping. Or you could do the whole distance with me and you've essentially rowed the Rowing Dangerously fundraiser. And that's incredible.
There's a specific like goal or challenge that you set the fundraiser, but then you then also have a pressure to provide the desired outcome after the money's been raised. What will it help us do? And I think the most successful challenges we've seen, including February, with the focus being on building the school, have that full story. And the ones that tend to kind of fall flat are the ones where it's like, donate because we're on this general fight or we're doing this general thing. And it does attract some attention, but like, I think there's a whole section of the charity sector that could do better at focusing in on the activity you're asking someone to take on and what it will mean and how it's connected. So Mind are currently doing their 27 in 27. So you run 27 miles in 27 days, and it's all about student mental health and the work that they do around student mental health, because 27% of students, and I'm sure it must be higher by now, 27% of students report mental health issues while at university. So it's lightning in a bottle. That campaign has been lightning in a bottle. You know, within the first few weeks, they've hit their fundraising target and people haven't even started running yet. And it's been a joy to watch. But with the ability for you as a champion fundraiser, used to carrying that weight of, I'm going to raise £100,000 for a given challenge that I'm going to take on, being able to then, in one regard, share the load and say to an audience of people that follow you, come along the journey with me. But then in the other, it works the other way. They get to come and help. You know, they get Absolutely. To take more action than just donate. They can take on a fundraising challenge that's in the theme of what's going on. And I think that's been one of the nicest things to see with the work that has gone into the challenges that you've hosted on GivePenny, has been that it's been a sense of connection and community with fundraisers that you don't achieve by saying, I'm doing this, can you donate? That has legs, but it only has legs for so long. Yeah. Like you say.
Well, for me, that's the big difference between GivePenny and I've used all these platforms for many years. And for me, that is the big difference of what the GivePenny offer is. It allows you to engage and you're almost building a family because these people, you know, this school doesn't get built because I go and paddle around Britain or do a run. This gets built because these incredible people donate. So, you know, so I get to do the fun bit, really. I'm doing the adventure, but it only gets built because all these amazing people are engaged with it. And the only way that you can engage them is to make them be part of that journey. And that what you're doing by having all these interactive tools and features like Spotify, like YouTube, Having these league tables, having videos, live conferencing, whatever you want on the platform, allows me to stay connected with the people that are supporting me, as opposed to me just every 10 minutes, like you see, posting a link on Facebook saying, donate on this page, donate on this page, which becomes almost spammy and cloggy after a while. And it's quite short-lived to just posting a link saying, sponsor me every 10 minutes. So you need to engage your audience in as many different ways as possible, because all your audience are enthused in different ways. You know, if you've got a young donor, he's likely to be, you know, stereotype, if I just stereotype for a second, the young teenager, he'd be more enthused by Twitch, for example, or gaming donations, whereas someone who's perhaps a little bit older, they would like to see a little video of what I've done in my training today. So you've got to use, the way I see GivePenny, to be honest, and the way I've always looked at it since I've started 3 or 4 years ago now, it's like a toolbox, and you can use that toolbox of different fundraising tools to the best of your ability. But what I've loved is being able to try things that you guys have worked with me to try, things that have never been in the market of fundraising before. So, you know, like we did a celebrity football match at Bloomfield Road at my beloved Blackpool ground.
I remember that well.
And we had, you know, it's incredible, really, because we had the match live streamed from my fundraising page, and people were able to donate based on, if a certain player scored, or if there was a penalty awarded, or if someone got a booking. And again, and that was something that had never been done before, but we just thought, you know what, let's try it and see how it works. And it worked very well. It was very cold for the team and everybody.
it was more than ever, we can relate to this. It was an empty football stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we're stood up in the TV broadcast area, which for people that haven't been to a football stadium, there won't be many, but for people who haven't, like, it's basically a concrete box. And Blackpool, I mean, there were people walking around in shorts that weren't playing football. So it was a warm day for everyone in Blackpool. For us, from the Midlands, we were like, it's cold up here. It is cold. And we had streaming equipment and laptops, and we were working out the best possible way to broadcast this celebrity football match. It was brilliant. We basically spun up a version of Soccer Aid with the tools available, and it, like you say, it was a really innovative way to bring people closer together, to connect the entire experience for people that maybe weren't sat on the sidelines watching or whatever, tuning in from home, straight on the fundraising page, so they've got that, you know, donate button there ready to donate while they're watching, which was really cool to build. So you mentioned a few of the other tools. You've got to tell the listeners more about how you've used Spotify and what that made you end up doing as a result. I'm talking about Frozen here, Mr. White.
Yeah, so again, moving on, sort of the challenges. One of the challenges in 2020 was a continuation from the Running Dangerously a few years earlier, and it was a project that I called Running Dangerously the Polar Edition. And the concept or the idea was that I would run 10 marathons in the 10 coldest places on Earth, including the North Pole on top of the world and Antarctica at the end of the Earth. And obviously COVID had a big impact on it, but I managed to get the first four in before we went into lockdown, which were Iceland, the Yukon in Canada, Alaska, and then the one you're referring to, which was the Siberian ice race in Russia. And I Siberian ice race was very early in January. I think it was like the 4th of January, 2020. And I'd been using the platform to raise lots of awareness. And one of the new tools that I'd not really tested so much was the Spotify playlist that you can use on the GivePenny platform. So I thought, well, the Spotify is great for any kind of running challenges, because most people, you know, like to have a set of headphones in when they go running, because you can sort of put motivational songs on. But what's great about the Spotify on the GivePenny is people can choose the songs. Well, I don't know if it's a great thing or it's a good thing or a bad thing, but they can choose the songs what you listen to. And obviously, because I was doing a polar challenge, which was all about cold weather and all about icy conditions, lots of the songs were coming from the sort of the Disney classic film that had just come out at the time, which was Frozen 2 and Frozen. So I had this playlist of about 30 songs that were all sort of Disney Frozen classics, with the Elsa singing "Let It Go, Let It Go," and all this sort of stuff. And so I thought, well, I was out in Siberia. I was just about to go to Siberia in Russia, and I thought 90% of the songs that I've been given have been from people trying to get me to do these Frozen bits and pieces. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to take this one stage further and give them a little surprise. So I went down the local fancy dress shop and I bought one of the Frozen characters outfits. There's a guy called Kristoff who's in both Frozen films, and he's a sort of adventurer ice harvester. But he's a real significant character who all the kids can relate to. So I ran the Siberian ice race dressed as Kristoff. And what it also allowed me to do, which is really good, which I've not done before, actually, which is quite important. Even though I was raising funds to build a school for young children in the Horn of Africa, by using the innovative tools and video and pictures and things that I could post, I was able to also raise awareness of other important things. So with Kristoff, I wanted to raise awareness of young people's mental health, because as I became a Frozen fan in this journey, when I got to watch a bit more about Frozen, I realized and did a bit of research, but Kristoff is the first Disney character as a male sort of prince that doesn't sort of, you know, he's not the typical prince that steps in front of the princess and says, I'll save the day. He's this new type of prince, the sort of the modern man, I guess, where he lets the princess fight her battles head on, but he's always there to support her. And what he also does, what we never really see in these films, is he speaks very openly about his own thoughts and feelings and what's going on in his head. So I just thought it was a really good thing to sort of raise awareness of some other charities like Young Minds about the importance of young people raising awareness of mental health. And it worked really well, because when I got back, lots of schools had been following the journey through the GivePenny page. And I got about five or six requests. Can you come into school and talk about young people's mental health? Which, of course, I did. But they all wanted me to come dressed as Kristoff because it was so relatable. So I'm going around the schools of Hampshire and Wiltshire in the early 2020 dressed as this Frozen character. But again, it allowed me then, using the platform, that what you find with the platform when you use all the tools, there is a big crossover between the digital world and the physical world, because you often end up meeting a lot of the people. Like another example would be on the Great British Paddle, which is my most recent expedition, was I was using the platform to post where I was on the map, but then also alert people that the next morning I'm going to be leaving from this location. So what happened then was 10, 20, 30 paddlers or paddleboarding groups would come down to the beach and paddle with me for that day, because I'd use the platform and they could track me live to see where I was. So again, we've gone from the digital world into the virtual world, and we've built that human connection as well, which I think is always really important. But again, it just goes back to, here's your toolbox, and the toolbox is it's not even a toolbox that's got certain tools in it, because the toolbox is your imagination and what you can do to move those tools and sort of innovate with them. Because the amount of times I've sort of contacted the GivePenny sort of technical team and said, I've got this idea, I don't know what you think to it, I don't know if it'll work, but can we try it? And then I've worked to come up with something which I've just never experienced before, to be very honest, with other fundraising platforms.
It's been nice to see, because we've and thank you, by the way. Thank you for dressing as Kristoff, raising the money you have in that way. I love the fact that you were running in fancy dress, which in itself is hard. I mean, I've heard stories of people running around the country with fridges on their backs. There was the guy who did the London Marathon dressed as a gorilla.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't finish for days.
Well, he's putting the fun back in, I think you guys say it quite often, putting the fun back in fundraising, and that's what fancy, everyone loves a bit of fancy dress, don't they? It doesn't matter how old you are, everyone loves a bit of fancy dress.
I think what can be taken from a lot of the stories that you have is that it can be applied at a macro level. So if you are someone who wants to raise money for a charity that isn't going to go to Siberia and try and run in some of the coldest places on the planet, but is going to try and maybe run a marathon in a month or something like that, then there are ways that you can inspire your networks, your social networks, your friends, your family, and cut through the noise. And like you say, like I think the days are gone where it's going to be successful or hugely successful just sharing your fundraising page and asking for a donation. That has a given shelf life. That works for a period of time. And then you start hearing people going, oh, again, oh, you're doing it again. Yeah, here's another tenner.
Yeah.
And then the following year it might be, here's a fiver. I think we're into that realm where the ask by the person who's fundraising has to be creative and engaging, and it has to be connected in some way. And one of the things that we know and that we're seeing with connected giving as a concept is that it's not about virtually doing anything. This whole idea of virtual marathons and virtual bike rides, and I don't virtually go for a run.
I go for a run.
We're not living in Tron or The Matrix or Lawnmower Man for people who are that old. We're in a world where we do these things for real, and we want to show them in a digital place. And we're capturing them in real life and then sticking them in a digital place so people can follow the journey, because they can't come with us. even you know, before the pandemic and even after the pandemic, you know, all of your mates can't join you for every single run if you're doing a virtual marathon or something. But can you share a bit of the experience, and can you bring them along for the ride in some way? Song choices. I've had to run to some horrendous running songs, and we're talking like, you know, Radiohead. I mean, running to Radiohead, and I don't know who it is. It might be an 80s track. Running up that hill.
Yeah. Like, good choice though.
Good choice, but like five times. Like, it, you're like, okay. But then in that regard, you come back, you report on that, and you go, God, I had to listen to that. I went on a run the other day, and running up that hill came on five times. And it was funny because I know who'd added those songs. I told them about it, so they feel more connected to what's going on, and they're more likely to be interested in what I'm doing and perhaps even tell someone else. The whole thing's about connection. And it definitely isn't about making a virtual version of anything. It's like, I'm going to really do this thing, and I need to capture it in a way digitally that allows you to come along for the ride in some way. So tell us more about rowing. The Great British Paddle. I followed you all the way through this. And I think this might have been the hardest thing I think anybody's ever had to try. And yeah, I think the listeners need to hear the story, because this is one of the most inspirational stories from an adventurer and fundraiser that I think you're ever likely to hear. Forget the fridge on the back and no shoes walking up a mountain. This is proper hardcore. Why don't you tell everybody about that?
Yeah, so the Great British Paddle was as I was saying earlier, when the COVID struck, the Running Dangerously Polar Edition project, of course, there was no travel allowed overseas and sort of before the first lockdown. So I needed to come up with something that was going to help me continue fundraising, but was closer to home, and also meant that I was socially distanced and isolated and all that sort of stuff. So I sort of racking my brains, and I'm always looking for things that I haven't done before and things that haven't been done before. So I sort of did a bit of research and came up with this idea that I called the Great British Paddle. And it was a world record, world first attempt to circumnavigate Great Britain on a stand-up paddleboard. And for the sort of fundraising, I was going to live at sea. And obviously because of the pandemic and things, and my new home was going to be living out at sea on a support boat.
Pause there. For you listener, if you've never had to try and stand up on a piece of epoxy floating on some water, you won't understand what's just come out of Jordan's mouth. He was going to stand up paddleboard around Great Britain. That is one of the hard stand up paddleboarding. A few feet is hard. This is incredible. You can continue now, Jordan. I just want to make sure people realize how that is.
Yeah, and it was that literally that hard from the start, because I wasn't a paddleboarder. I'd never paddleboarded. So I went on this journey, and, you know, three or four days in, I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing here? You know, I was looking at my GivePenny page with a little map on it, and I couldn't even see the distance that I'd done. It was that small, you know, in the ocean. It was like, this is going to take a lot longer than I envisaged. But, you know, and it was an amazing journey of you know, it was, I learned so much about life, about people, about fundraising. And I paddled obviously through the winter and things. And unfortunately, after 2,377 kilometers and 149 days, 7 hours and 33 minutes, I was told that I had to stop by the Scottish government because they were about to go into a tier four complete national lockdown. At the time, I'd paddled the whole of the south coast of England. I'd paddled round Land's End, the north coast of Devon to South Wales, across the Irish Sea, up the Irish coast, across from Northern Ireland to Scotland, and then up the west coast of Scotland and across North Scotland throughout the winter, which, as I say, took me 5 months of paddling relentlessly. I was stopped sort of 2,377 kilometres in, which probably had about another 6 weeks to go till the end. And it would have been, of course, a world record, world first. But what was really interesting was when I stopped, I was on about 30,000, 35,000 pound, I think. And using the platform in the weeks that followed, even though my challenge had stopped, we were able to put that number up to nearly 90,000 pound by doing videos, by doing pictures, by sharing YouTube blogs on the platform. So it was incredible to think that I paddled for 5 months, raised 30,000 pounds, stopped paddling and raised another 60,000 pounds doing anything.
These challenges have a legacy. And I think that something that's important to note is that if you're a fundraiser and you're about to take on a challenge and the journey itself is what it's about, it's not about the finish line. It's not about getting over that ticker tape. It's about how it feels if it's a marathon on mile 25. You know, it's part of the journey. And for you, it's like, you just say it out loud, like it's nothing, like, but yeah, paddle across from Ireland to Scotland. You know, it's like, yeah, just stand at paddleboard it up from there during the winter. Yeah. And I didn't stop there. I just kept going. While there was a pandemic going on, I just kept going. You know, to hear it roll off the tongue is just immense, and a testament to your character and certainly the grit that you have. The grit that people find is the bit that I think a lot of their friends and family want to see as part of their challenge. And during it, you know, you raise a certain amount of awareness and a certain amount of money. The legacy that's created as a result has value as well. So it's your journey, your story on the Great British Paddle after you'd finished was a case of then saying, look at what I did. And here's a way of you joining us. Here's a way of you joining us on the journey, because you may not have heard of this. This is the first time you've seen this. So look at what I did, and like you say, it has that residual effect.
Well, even now, so this is like what 18, this is finished 7 weeks ago now, and 2 days ago I did a talk. Which again, I got a message on my GivePenny page, a comment, and they were asking if a person was asking if I could do a talk for a private paddleboarding club in return for a donation on the page. So we did an hour and a half talk plus some Q&A, and I got another £500 donation on the page, and that's 2 months after the project finished. So it's limitless in terms of the fundraising capability, but like anything, it comes down to the individual fundraisers driving it. You have to put the work in, put the effort in. But if you take a couple of hours or a day developing your page and the gadgets that are on your page and the widgets, that could be the difference between, you know, £1,000 and £10,000 or £100,000 just by using the tools available and speaking to people as well. Because I think, as you said, for me, It's not about the ticker tape. It's not about getting to the finish line. It's about why you're doing it, but it's also about people. And, you know, using, again, it was a very high level of sort of fundraising because we had photographers, we had videographers. In the past, I've just done it on my iPhone and stuck it on the page, but this time we had some professionals working with us. And if you've got that sort of access and resources, again, you can put all them into the platform. And we had a weekly every week we had a series going out of episodes that covered, and like you say, people want to see the hardships. If they're going to donate £20, you're like, that's half a day's pay for your average person in the UK, £25-30. That's a lot of money. So you should have to earn that, you know, as a fundraiser. I want you to see that I'm working for those funds. I don't expect it or take your donations for granted. I know that you want to see me giving it 110% at everything I do if I'm going to be taking, you know, £25 out of your wage salary or whatever.
It's important to note that, like, as we've grown up with the internet and we've learned to trust it to make payments, and then we've ended up with all of these platforms where we don't even think twice about, you know, ordering a taxi, being able to see where it is, walking outside, getting in it, and off we go, and then paying for it without taking your wallet out of your pocket. We're getting to a point now where, like, the speed at which things can happen might mean that we don't have chance to look at what's going on while we're doing it. So when you're donating to a charity because someone you know or you're aware of is doing something special, I think we've lost a little bit of allowing someone time to smell the flowers while they're making the donation. And that, I think slowing it down has benefit. It's like, watch this video, see this latest hardship, see the challenges I've had to face as part of what I'm doing, and make a donation. And if you want it to, like, as a feeling, last a bit longer, add a song to my playlist, or maybe pledge a pound a mile or whatever. And effectively, you slow down the donation process so that the donor feels more involved. Your friend, your family member, they're on the journey a little bit with you.
Yeah,
The extreme version of that being they then go and take on a similar challenge, like in the February example. It does lead me to another question. So,
but just on that point, Lee, also for me as the person doing the challenge, it works both ways, because when they're commenting, or they've watched a video and they give you feedback, that spurs you on because you know that they're following that journey. So it's not just about sort of appeasing the donors and the sponsors, because I get as much from them as hopefully they're getting from me. So it's like you say, it's about connection, it's about relationships. And that's really important, because there was many a times when I wanted to give up, but I'd go through the comments on the donations page and I'm thinking, God, people really believe in me. People really want to see this succeed. And I use that as, and I'm sure most fundraisers use that as fuel, as motivation. And when you've not got much fuel or motivation left, it's those little comments that that go a long way. It really
is. I tell you what, you've earned every brick of that score. I'll tell you that now. I'm really excited to hear what's next. Although part of me doesn't want to ask you, because you deserve a rest, Jordan. You need to have a chill. We've all been stuck at home chilling out watching Netflix. I've watched so many series on Netflix, even on Disney Plus. You know, I'm thinking Jordan doesn't even know what WandaVision is. So when are you going to rest? That's my first question. How will you rest? What have you learned as part of your most recent journey about the importance of rest and that kind of stuff? And then what do you foresee as being something that you'll take on in the future?
Yeah, well, at the moment, I'm trying to embrace the outdoors. You know, I've been stuck in a home like everyone else. It was quite tough mentally to go from being in an incredible team in the outdoors for 5 months to then in a tier four lockdown, living on your own. It was pretty brutal by all accounts, but the same for everybody. You know, it is what it is. So trying to embrace the outdoors, doing lots of wild swimming in weird and wonderful places, in lakes and rivers. So I would like to do something again closer to home, because I like this idea that you can get people involved as well. You know, as much as you can do digitally, I do like it when there's a chance for people to come and meet you who have supported you and sponsor you and things like that. So I need to finish this school. So this school is very nearly finished. I've been working on this for 2.5 years now. So I will go out to Africa, and that's the final sort of chapter and legacy of that whole fundraising that's been going on for the last few years, is to show all the donors, you know, that have helped me in some way from all the different challenges, that look, we've actually done it. We've built a school. So from showing that picture on the first Give Penny page, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, to now showing a picture next to it, an empty piece of land, to a school with 200 kids in uniforms going to school, is just absolutely going to be the most rewarding, fulfilling thing in the world, I think. So as soon as COVID's done, I'll fly back out to the Horn of Africa and make sure that project's finished and get some good footage to share on the platform. And then it's I'll sit down and reassess. But there's lots of great charities that I work with already as a sort of patron, as a trustee, different charities, the Army Cadets. I think I'd love to get them involved in a challenge, where, because there's so many of them and they're all so keen and adventurous and want to do challenges. So I'd love to get the Army Cadets in some more. I'd like to do a lot more around mental health and young people's mental health as well. I think it's potentially a big problem in the coming years with what's gone on. And, you know, so I just for me, it's not about necessarily, I think, doing charitable adventures and even fundraising, it's not about how much money you make. It's about how much of a positive impact you can have on the world. And it doesn't have to always be monetary. You can, just by sharing things, just by talking about things, by giving your time, you can have just as much an impact. Sometimes making the donation is the easy thing to do, but going to do your own challenge, that's going the extra mile for me. You know, getting involved and setting up your own page and fundraising, but for the same cause. You know, that for me is really inspiring, because And I'm guilty as well. Sometimes, you know, I haven't got the time or I haven't got the energy. I'll just donate my money to my friend's challenge. But actually what I want to do is people to get involved in the challenge and come on the journey with us. I've got to go to the North Pole and Antarctica in the next 12 months. So I'm still keen to finish the Running Dangerously Polar Edition projects. But yeah, just keep trying to have a positive impact on young people's lives, because for me, it's the most fulfilling thing in the world to see, you know, positive change. So yeah, try be the difference that makes a difference, as I often say.
That is an amazing way to cap off what has been my favorite conversation in months. Thank you so much for coming on the Jolly Good Show. And I think be the difference that makes the difference is a nice thing to take with you, dear listener. We get like one listener, Jordan. We talk about it. We've probably got more than one, but the one listener that does listen, apart from me, after we've recorded, I think we'll find a lot of inspiration in the stories you've told today and what have you.
Well, it's interesting because I often say actually that, you know, I know that I'm not going to change the world, but I know that I can change the world for one or two people's lives. And I think if you can make a difference, you should make a difference. So maybe we might just change the world for that one listener.
Yeah. What do you reckon they're called? I don't know what they're called. It's got to be a Dave, hasn't it?
It's got to be a Dave, standard. My dad's Dave as well.
Jordan, thanks so much for joining us today. If anybody wants to keep track of where you're at, and it's no longer on a paddleboard halfway around the country, how can they find out more about you, the projects you're working on? How can they find what to donate to? What do you want to plug?
Just on my website, jordanwiley.org, or my social media handle is at Mr. Jordan Wiley. You know, I try and be very as positive as I can using my channels. I try to give out good messages and try to avoid negativity at all costs. So please feel free to reach out, engage, and I'll always do my best to help where I can. Thank you.
Fantastic. That was Jordan, ladies and gentlemen, or just gentlemen, or maybe just a lady, or anybody. Thanks for listening. I'm Lee Clark from GivePenny. You've been listening to The Jolly Good Show, and we'll be back really soon. Thanks very much. See ya.